Welcome to the Nutrition Science Podcast, where we help you cut through the noise and make informed, science-based decisions about nutrition and your health. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Nutrition Science Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adrian Chavez, and today we have a Q&A episode. Today we're going to talk about four topics. First topic that we're going to discuss is how to choose the right milk for your nutritional needs, whether or not to choose a dairy milk or a plant-based alternative, and what to look out for if you're going to choose a plant-based alternative among the hundreds of options available there. Second thing that we're going to discuss is whether or not there's a difference between a refined pasta and whole wheat pasta, and also what to pay attention to there. The third topic that we're going to discuss is leftover rice and whether or not this is something that we need to be concerned about. This topic has caught some headlines recently, and it is something that we do need to pay attention to. So there are some potential dangers with storing leftover rice improperly that I want to discuss today and help you minimize your risk and make sure that you're storing your rice properly. The last thing that we're going to talk about is microplastics. So there was some headlines that caused some hysteria all over social media because a paper was published that showed that individuals who had heart disease had microplastics in the plaques of their arteries. And I want to discuss that particular study and also the headlines and the issue or concern with microplastics overall, and whether or not it's something that we really need to be paying attention to. And if it is, how can we minimize our risk? Before we get into the episode, I want to thank you all for sharing the show, for leaving reviews, and really just helping to get this show out to more people and help with the growth of the podcast. So the podcast has been growing quite rapidly over the last few months, and that is thanks to you all. So I've mentioned this before, but podcasts only grow when those people who listen to the show share it with others, and also when those people who listen to the show leave a positive review. These are the two main things that help to fuel podcast growth, and I really appreciate all of you who have been sharing the show. I see a lot of physicians, dietitians, personal trainers tagging me on social media, recommending that their clients listen to it, recommending the people that they follow or the people that follow them listen to it. And I really appreciate it. I have created this podcast as a way to be a free education in all things nutrition. And my goal is to continue to make this a free, accessible education so that anyone can get onto this podcast, listen through, learn what they need to about nutrition, and take that and apply it. So when you share this podcast out to more people, you're helping more people, and then also you're helping to support the show. And along with supporting the show, as I mentioned a second ago, this is a free resource. I want this to continue to be a free resource. And part of that continuing to be a free resource to you is me having to bring on sponsors, because at this point, I have been spending my own time and money to publish this podcast, and that is unsustainable over the long run. And I do not want to stop publishing the show. I know it's valuable to a lot of you, and now there are thousands and thousands and thousands of you who are listening to every single episode. And so I want to make sure that I can continue to publish this podcast and continue to put out even higher quality episodes in the future. And that's going to require me bringing on sponsors. And there's other ways to support the show as well. If you go to thenutritionsciencepodcast.com, you'll find information about sponsors and affiliates. And if you can go there and use those links, that helps to support the show. That helps to ensure that I can continue to publish episodes way into the future and continue to improve the quality of this podcast. So if you haven't seen the new website yet, it's thenutritionsciencepodcast.com. I recommend going there because you can search around. So you can't really do that on like Spotify and Apple, but you can search the individual episodes that you're looking for, and all of the information related to the podcast, related to anything that I discuss on this show, is going to be found there. So go to thenutritionsciencepodcast.com if you have any questions related to the podcast or if you want to help support the show in any way. With that said, let's go ahead and jump into the content of the show. So the first thing, choosing milks. Cow's milk, the dairy milk that we generally consume, is a pretty nutritious food. It's high in calcium, high in protein, has some B vitamins, and so there's no reason to avoid it unless you have an intolerance to it, or for some ethical reason, you don't want to consume cow's milk. So I recommend, if you don't have an intolerance to dairy or lactose, and if you do have a lactose intolerance, you can do lactose-free milk. And then you can also do their milks that have no lactose or low lactose and high protein. That's another option too, if you want to get more protein through your milk. But if you don't have a reason to be avoiding cow's milk, then I recommend doing cow's milk, because that's going to be a quality source of proteins, vitamins, or minerals. Now, if for whatever reason you don't want to consume cow's milk, then there are many, many alternatives. The best one that is naturally nutritious, that's higher in protein, is going to be soy milk. And so soy milk is one of the better options, again, just because it's a little bit higher in protein. For most of the plant-based milks, though, one of the main things that we get from milk that we want to make sure that we're getting from our milk alternatives, we want to try to get some protein if we can. Now, if you're getting like an almond milk that has, you know, just low calories, low sugar, low fat, and it's like 30 calories and doesn't have any protein, not a big deal. Ideally, we want to be getting some protein from our milk. Ideally, we want to be getting some calcium from our milk. Potentially, you know, some of the milk has added vitamin D. That's also a good thing that we could be getting from our milk, but again, not a necessity because it's really not that much in the milk. But calcium is really the main thing that we want to be looking for. We want to make sure that they added calcium, and ideally we want to be getting protein. But it's okay if you get a milk without protein. Let's say, for example, you like to put some almond milk into your smoothies, for example, you know, that's perfectly fine. But if you're choosing a milk and you're trying to get something comparable nutritionally, those are really the main things that we want to be looking for, is we want to make sure that that milk has, you know, sufficient amount of protein. A milk's going to have like 7 or 8 grams of protein per 120-ish calories. If you're getting like a 2%-ish milk, or whole milk's going to have a little bit more than that. But, you know, kind of similar calorie to protein ratio is what we were looking for. You know, there's flax milks and protein milks where they just add protein. There's all types of plant-based alternatives that can mimic that protein to calorie ratio, and that are perfectly suitable alternatives if you don't want to choose a dairy milk. So that's what I would recommend. Again, it's fine if you don't include protein in your milk, as long as you're meeting your protein needs elsewhere, but you do want to try to get the calcium from that, because it's difficult to get your calcium from a normal diet if you're not including, or if you're choosing milk sources that don't have any calcium. It's typically going to be harder. And I'm saying this from experience of, you know, monitoring people's diet and seeing, you know, calcium intake among individuals who do and don't consume a milk or milk alternative. And that's 30%. Typically, they'll have 30-ish percent of your daily needs of calcium. And for many people, that 30% is, you know, the gap of what they need to be consuming enough calcium. And so, you know, making sure that you have a milk source that's providing that calcium can be important. You can get the calcium elsewhere, but just make sure you're getting it from somewhere. And if you're going to be choosing a milk, might as well get some calcium from it. So that's the answer to the first question. There's nothing wrong with cow's milk unless you have an intolerance to it. If you have an intolerance to it, choose a plant-based option. If you're going to choose a plant-based option, look for one that has sufficient amounts of protein and calcium. Protein's not as big of a deal. Calcium, I would prioritize making sure that it has some added calcium to it. Next thing, whole wheat pasta versus regular pasta. And the main difference here is the whole wheat pasta typically have some more nutrients like B vitamins, but oftentimes those are added back to the refined pasta. It'll be enriched with B vitamins. It's the fiber. So a whole wheat pasta is going to have 5 or 6 grams of fiber. A refined pasta is going to have 1 or 2. And so you're talking about a 4 or 5 gram fiber difference. Not a huge deal in the grand scheme of things. If your diet is already high in fiber, if you're eating plenty of beans and fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds, not a big deal if you're not getting that extra 3 or 4 grams of fiber from your pasta. But as a dietary pattern, if you make it a habit of choosing refined bread and grains and you're eating a couple of servings a day, that's 3 or 4 grams of fiber that you're missing out on multiple times per day. And that can add up to 6, 8 grams of fiber, 10 grams of fiber per day that you're missing out on that you could otherwise be getting if you were choosing whole grain products. And the reason that that's important is because the average American is only eating 14 grams of fiber per day, which is about half of what the recommendations are. So people are not eating enough fiber in general, and choosing whole wheat sources of pasta and bread can help to meet those fiber needs. And I generally recommend going with those options. Now, if you just prefer a refined pasta, tastes better to you, you're eating plenty of fiber, not a big deal. But as a general dietary pattern, it makes sense to prioritize whole grain options, pastas and breads and bagels and pitas and tortillas, you know, any type of grain options. It makes sense to prioritize whole grain options that aren't refined, that are higher in fiber, And the easiest thing to do is just turn it around and look at the fiber content. If you look at it, let's say, for example, there's 30 grams of carbohydrates, you want at least 3 grams of fiber. So at least 1 gram of fiber for every 10 grams of carbs. If you see a 5, you know, it's 50 grams of fiber or 50 grams of carbs, you want at least 5 grams of fiber. So just take off the last number, you want at least that many grams of fiber. So if it's 65 grams of carbs, you want at least 6 grams of fiber at the minimum. And if you're going for those options, you're going to be choosing higher fiber whole grain sources. You're going to be getting more fiber in your diet. That's going to have a positive impact on your health over time, because 10 more grams of fiber per day in the diet is probably going to make a difference for many people, especially if you're only consuming 14. Now, if you're already consuming 50, then you don't need the extra 10. It's not going to make that big of a deal, and you can go with the refined pasta. But if you're consuming 15 and you're trying to choose refined pasta because you don't like the whole wheat option, your better bet for building a healthier dietary pattern for you is to go with the whole wheat option. So that's my take there. It's fine if you go with refined grain. It's going to be lower in fiber. Most people aren't eating enough fiber. If you're eating plenty of fiber, you're fine. Most people aren't. So it's probably best for most people to go with the whole grain option. It's going to have more fiber. Next is, do we need to be afraid of leftover rice? So uncooked rice can have spores of a bacteria called Bacillus cereus. And when we cook rice and we allow that rice to cool to between 40 and 140 degrees Fahrenheit, the amount of that bacteria starts to replicate. And so that can increase our risk of getting a GI infection from consuming that rice. So if you let your rice heat up, let's say you cook your rice and then you leave it on the counter, and you're supposed to put it into storage at least an hour after taking it off of heat. So if it's in a rice cooker and it's heated up, it's fine. But if you take it off the heat and it starts to cool and it gets under that 140 degrees Fahrenheit and you leave it there for at least an hour, that's going to lead to the replication of these bacteria, and that's going to increase your risk of getting a GI infection from eating the rice. So you want to be careful about that. Let's say you went and got takeout, and instead of, let's say, leaving it on the counter, you want to eat it and put it away immediately. So anything that you're not going to eat, you want to put that away immediately instead of leaving it on the counter for hours at a time to sit there and for those spores to replicate. So this is something that we actually do want to be concerned with. And when you're cooking rice, just pay attention. If the rice is not on heat, put it in the fridge. So as soon as you take the rice off heat, you want to leave it as little time as possible, not on heat and not being cooled. So when you take it off heat, put it straight into the fridge, so it spends as little time as possible in that 40 to 140 degrees range. Because when it's higher than 140 degrees, the bacteria cannot replicate. And when it's lower than 40, the bacteria cannot replicate. But when it's in that middle range, these bacteria can replicate. And if you allow that rice to stay in that middle range for a long period of time, this is going to increase your risk of a GI infection. And that's not something you want. A lot of people, you know, kind of don't take these things seriously, but you can develop long-term gastrointestinal health issues from one bout of food poisoning. So we just want to pay attention to it and be careful with this. The last thing that we're going to discuss today is microplastics. So as I mentioned a second ago, there was a study that was published, and this study got a lot of attention because it was published in a really important journal, the New England Journal of Medicine. And the study title was Microplastics and Nanoplastics in Atheromas and Cardiovascular Events. So they basically found small particles of plastic in the plaques of individuals who had heart issues, and this got published everywhere. So you saw these headlines on various news sites saying that microplastics are linked to heart disease. So let's talk about what this study actually means and whether or not we need to be concerned about microplastics. So microplastics are tiny particles of plastic, like really small particles of plastic that get leached off of the plastics that our food is stored in and we actually consume them. So microplastics also get leached into the air, and we can inhale them through that method as well. But the concern that I'm going to be discussing today is our exposure through food. And so we can get exposed to microplastics through food by food that is stored in plastic containers, especially if that container was heated. So for example, if you microwave a lot of things in plastic containers, let's say you do meal prep and you put a bunch of stuff in plastic containers and you microwave it every day, that is increasing the amount of these microplastics that is getting leached into the food because it's being exposed to heat, which is releasing some of these microplastics, and it's being released into the food. Another example is if you're drinking bottled water and that bottled water has been stored and it was transported in the heat and it was stored in the heat and it was in a warehouse and a really hot warehouse and then a really hot truck. And it's been in a lot of heated environments throughout the time that it's been sitting on the shelf and in transport before you consume that bottle of water. That bottle of water is going to have a little bit more microplastics, and we're going to get exposed to some of those microplastics by drinking the bottle of water. Another route of exposure is through canned food items. So many of them have a plastic liner in them. So if you're, for example, eating a soup that has a plastic liner, you're going to get a little bit of microplastics in that soup. And the canned soup items are pressurized, so they tend to also have kind of high microplastic levels as well. And so they tend to have kind of high microplastic levels as well. All of these are the ways that we can get exposed to microplastics to our food. And studies have shown over the last couple of decades that these exposures might be causing some health issues. There hasn't been major studies showing that individuals who consume bottled water or who are exposed to these at high levels for various reasons have any negative health issues. All of the studies have been done in animal studies and in cell culture studies where they use very high doses that aren't representative of the actual exposures that we're getting in our normal day-to-day lives. So a lot of times you'll see some fear-mongering around microplastics because they'll say, these plastics are linked to Alzheimer's, for example, and the reality is that they were linked to Alzheimer's in a mouse that is predisposed to get Alzheimer's and that was exposed to super high levels of these plastics. Like typically, when you see a headline like that, typically the reality is what I just explained in terms of the study. It was a study that they used rats who were predisposed to Alzheimer's and they gave really high levels of the plastic and showed that it increased their Alzheimer's risk. Typically, not always, but typically. That's the case with these microplastics. Most of the research is in animal studies that are using very high doses that aren't representative of human exposure. And there hasn't been any good research showing that the exposures that humans are getting through our food supply is causing any major negative health effects. With that said, it does make sense to try to reduce your exposure to these microplastics. So a couple of easy ways to do that. Don't microwave your food in plastic. So if you're going to microwave your food, put it in a glass. Buy glass Tupperware if you're taking Tupperware to your work or elsewhere. Just avoid heating things up in plastic. Don't drink bottled water. Not only is it terrible for the environment of wasting all these plastic bottles, because if you're drinking sufficient amounts of water, this is one of the reasons that I really have a hard time drinking bottled water, because if I'm drinking enough water for my needs, I'm drinking 6, 7, 8 bottles per day, and that's a lot of plastic, that's a lot of waste. So find alternatives to bottled water if you're currently using bottled water. One of the great things you can do is fill up those big 5-gallon jugs and have one of those water coolers. That's an easy option. You can also do like a reverse osmosis filter underneath your sink or something along those lines as well if you don't want to drink tap water. But I would caution against drinking from bottled waters all the time for the reasons that I mentioned a second ago. We have no idea how many microplastics are going to be in each specific bottle because we don't know how much heat it was exposed to during storage and transport before you consumed the bottled water. So I would just be cautious there. But with some of those things, just don't heat plastic and then consume it is what I would really pay attention to personally. And then also with certain things, like when I buy canned foods, I look for BPA-free cans. BPA is one of the plastics that is inside the lining of the cans of canned foods and has been shown to have some potential negative health effects. This isn't a deal breaker for me, but it is something that I generally tend to try to pay attention to. Also, when I have anything out of a can, I try to rinse it if I can. So if I'm having beans or corn or anything like that, I have to get some of these microplastics off. So in the grand scheme of things, though, microplastics are not just destroying your health. So I see all these crazy headlines where people start to think that microplastics are, you know, they really need to be paying attention to them and avoiding them at all costs. You know, really high levels of exposure might have some minor negative health effects if you're just being exposed to high levels over a long period of time. But there's no evidence to show that there's any major health effects that are going to occur from even high levels of exposure that we could reasonably get through our normal day-to-day lives. So not something that you should be overly concerned with. Of the hierarchy of things that are important for your health, this one is far down the list, but some simple things that you can do to avoid or minimize consuming things that were heated in plastic. So quick review. Number one, milk and milk alternatives. Milk is perfectly fine if you can tolerate dairy and lactose. If you want to go with an alternative, if you want to choose an alternative for a variety of reasons, try to find something that has plenty of protein and calcium in it. Number two, whole grain pastas are going to be better than refined grain pastas in terms of fiber content, in terms of B vitamins. but it's going to be perfectly fine if you choose a refined grain pasta, as long, or any refined grain products, as long as your overall dietary pattern is providing you enough fiber and micronutrients. Number three, we do want to pay attention to how we store leftover rice and really be careful with allowing rice to sit out for too long, because that can increase our risk of food poisoning. And the last one, microplastics probably pose some small risk to our health at high levels of exposure, but in the grand scheme of things, this isn't something that we need to be overly concerned about, and we can minimize our exposure or reduce our exposure quite a bit just by avoiding foods and beverages that are stored in plastic containers that have been heated or that have been exposed to very high levels of heat for a long period of time. All right, that's all I have for this episode of the Nutrition Science Podcast. Just a reminder, if you are a regular listener of the podcast and you enjoy listening to the show, your fee for the podcast is to go leave a review wherever you like to listen to it. So if you haven't already, head over to Spotify or Apple, take 2 minutes, leave a review, helps get the podcast out to more people, and I get to read it, and I really appreciate it, and I get to read it, and I really like to read those. I like to see the feedback, and so I really appreciate it when you all do that. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Nutrition Science Podcast. I hope you all have a great day, and we will talk soon.